very much. Thanks for the invitation to read in Cork City in the Long Valley. We hear about you in Dublin and all the great readings you have. So, I'm going to read for maybe 40 minutes. And the first poem I'm going to read if I can find it. It's called "I Live in a Flat." And one of the joys of living in a flat is the housework. And I wouldn't be an honor student or honor graduate of housework. I suppose it mildly. This poem is called "The Sink Full of Dirty Dishes." My life is a sink full of dirty dishes. But in fairness, I'm trying to clean up my act in this cruel circus of life. My little flat is half tidy. My friends are arriving at 6 p.m. Dinner is 7 p.m. It is now 3 a.m. I can succeed or fail. It's up to me. It's not the first time I run away from chaos and debris. Sometimes I run away quickly. Other times I've walked away real slow. If only to think about who is messing over who and why. But it all comes back to the sink for the dirty dishes. The ones in the heart and soul. A kitchen for only you can cook the dinner. So you must not burn anything, because you can blister your soul. I remember as a child, my mother used to cook my dinner in the smallest scullery of the family home. Every dinner time in the middle of the day, I always got well fed. All that love she gave to nourish a child's body and the struggling brain. She was often left with a sink full of dirty dishes. I'm trying to clean up my act in this cruel circus of life. Drink, horses, and cigarettes. I've begun with drink. A last passionate farewell goodbye kiss. Mr. Alcohol, a lying Judas that has bettered me often. To the task at hand, I do not really care about the dishes. It's a little bit of the dirty plate of love I'm trying to clean. That's the word. Freedom was a word that was used maybe excessively in the 60s, particularly the late 60s, but recent life led me to write this poem called "Not So Free." Not So Free. The typewriter is jammed on lock. The bills are only with luck half paid. 6:15 a.m. Caught between sleep and afternoon exhaustion. The unremarkable chaos of the sink's graveyard of dishes. The tolling bell of parking freedom ringing in my heart. Students, workers, teachers, Euroseeds, yes and no voters, the locked up innocent. Gangsters and their mauls with their indecent smiles of deceit. It is only half wrong. It is also not right. But it is a long way from excellent or great. Dolls, girls, sex kittens, meowing and purring orgasms of greed. So I know that kind of degradation leaves a nasty palm, like a dose of the clap to keep you company in hell. putties galore who become alcoholic bores, pill popping babes who after they get laid, sorry that they could not make it back to a safe house. 7 a.m. too much to do, no time to sleep. News headlines, tribunal reports, corruption, no proof. I know that when you're at the end of the line, you do not need bullshit or waffle or spoof or proof, like a rope being dropped from the top with a carefully handmade noose on which you can die. A kind of freedom. No wonder I felt out of sorts. A man in a room, in a house, on a street, in a city, in a country, in a world not so free, including a bit of you and including a bit of me. That's not so free. I spent a year in San Francisco in the 1969, and then about 30-odd years later, early 2000, I made a return visit. And the place I spent a lot of time in was over the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County called Sausalito. So this is about a revisit to Sausalito 30 years later. Sausalito dawn. Into the new morning sky, over the reawakening world around the bay, at short intervals, the early morning flights ascend and nose their way into heaven. Taillights trace their progress like an artist's colors beginning the journey into the unknown and unfinished shape. 30 years later, I have returned here to decode my own secret passage. Transient, pilgrimage, permanence, searching, discovering, and seeking, nosing, and climbing into the sky. This poem is about a couple of goldfish that were given to me. I wouldn't have a great reputation about, I can hardly look after myself to put it in, but I find it hard to look after goldfish. But this is a story of the goldfish that were given by his birthday friend. Called A Dead Goldfish Feast. It's a dirty world, particularly when you know that your life could have been spared, that your boss could have had the decency to feed you and change the water in your bowl, perform the elementary task of hygiene and cleanliness. When you know that you did not have to end up floating bloaters at the top of the fish tank. When you know, even if you're only a goldfish and a dead one at that, that things could have been better. The last time I saw the boss, I suspected the worst. The water was 2 days late being changed, and neither I nor my partner had been fed. In fairness, I would like to say the boss is hardly capable of taking care of himself. So there was a kind of and inevitability about the whole thing. So God bless the goldfish. Dublin has a very commercial area where the business of commerce goes on. It's a bit of a circus. The same thing. So this call, it has to be read in the south side of Dublin accent. This is very important. So I'll read it in. carried minus hot rock cabin TV actors. So it's called Tampa Bar Little Boy. Temple Bore Little Boy. We ever down in Temple Bore when your mind was far from clear, your pocket was very, very light, and security was very, very tight. This yoke from cabin TV softly whispers into your ear, how are you, dear? I backed that horse you gave me at Cheltenham last year, but it fell at the last, so far yet so near. I thought I saw your name in Stubbs Gazette. I was sorry to hear about your favorite sister, the one who married Abdul Farouk up in the mosque last week. Was that you I saw begging in Grafton Street, playing a barong with your dirty feet? You were sort of unshaven and ragged. Those corduroy breeches you wore looked like you got them in war and want, but you look so pale and gaunt. You're a terrible man. This was a crack. Tell us, what's your latest scam? Have you heard about the police inspector who mistook a stag for a ram? He got off without a smudge because his best friend is a judge. This is my friend Anya. She's just back from the States. She's not a lesbian. Don't mind the horror. But we both drive the same car, and we live right here in Temple Bar. But we are great mates. We're off to Bangkok for Easter. We love those thighs. It's so cheap you can live like a queen. This place is jammers tonight. I'm making so much money. I'm always on the go. Anya, that's our cue. There's those two fine things. Seamus, if you're insured, come out to where I work. You can be cured. So I mentioned I spent a bit of time in America, a year in San Francisco, around California, and then I spent like 2 years from May 1970, just knocking around America. I wrote this poem on the back of a napkin in New Jersey when I was over there, maybe 97, 2000. But it's a pretty well-researched poem. It goes from New Haven, Connecticut, to New York, to Washington, D.C., to Biloxi, Mississippi, to New Orleans, to Taos, New Mexico, Tucson, Arizona, Los Angeles, Washington State, Portland, Oregon, Chicago. Anyway, it's called There Are Not a Lot of Americans in America. I'm not saying I counted them all, but I nearly tried to, you know. There are not a lot of Americans in America. There are rivers of cars with lights like stars. Mountains of skyscrapers like ribbons of concrete paper winding around the waste of cities oversized and densely populated, not all integrated, with many spiritually mutilated, some emotionally castrated, in a life not fully incorporated. There are an awful lot of Americans in America. Some are getting out of bed in L.A. Others setting their alarm clocks in New Jersey. It's all a bit topsy-turvy, like a trial without a jury, a court case where the judge decided to stay at home, and many are very much alone, looking for solutions and friends who understand their heavy demands. There are an awful lot of Americans in America. There are plans, scams, suntans, badlands, crime, drugs, cops, racism, dollar bills so scarce they constantly need refills, flowing like the Mississippi River on the way to the ocean. people with the notion, trying to forget all this constant motion. And there are an awful lot of Americans in America. There are factions, different sectors, millionaires from Texas, ranchers from Wyoming, the lost and lonely who are constantly roaming. Some lives live like pawns, others messed over, only interested in percentage, by manipulators, overfed people, and the hungry too. And there are an awful lot of Americans in America. Rents that are too high, people will die to defend their property, colleges and students all over the place, fraternities, sororities, weird agendas and strange priorities, museums full of art, people in jails and asylums playing a humble part. Every night in the White House Oval Office, the lights are dim, a pause as the world spins along. Half the world is asleep, the other half awake. It is the century 2000. America is getting bigger and bigger. Everything will be alright if America doesn't burst. America! Who's it gonna make? America! Who's it gonna break? And there are an awful lot of Americans in America! This poem kind of underpins some of the social problems in Dublin. And it's simply called Jesus Tries to Get a Drink Out of Bed Late at Night in Dublin. Peter, what is the hour? Master, by the clock on Trinity College, it is now 2 a.m. Master, this preaching is thirsty work. We are all in need of a drink, but all the inns in the town are closed, with their shutters down. Master, not all the citizens are believers. Many have no faith at all. They only believe in the passing glitter of gold and silver. Master, what are we to do? James and John, declare. They've never been in a town like this, where everything closes down so early in the evening. Peter, I feel in this town there are many hypocrites with small minds. They pretend to praise the Lord, but when the Lord and his family seek help, they behave like followers of Satan with his band of devils. Master, Mark has just returned from the mission on which you sent him to find drink. On the street called Leeson Street, there are dark catacombs where there are many non-believers. They're all assembled dancing and drinking much wine. Mark says they will give us wine in exchange for gold. He says, because of our long hair and Eastern dress, none of the innkeepers will give us a bed for the night. The innkeepers say camels are strictly forbidden. They do not understand that it is their only mode of transport. Luke reports, to the west of the town, there are travelers who would give us lodgings for the night, provided that our camels do not upset their horses. They would give us a native drink, which is famous in this town. A kind of dark wine with a white surface. Peter, take me to these people. These are my friends. Peter, truly I say to you, I've never been in a town where I badly, so badly needed a drink. This is a poem. I wrote this in the Pyrenees, a tourist village called Germany, and something we all have to do called thinking. Thinking. I am thinking. I am thinking when I wake up. I am thinking at noon. I am thinking in the afternoon. I am thinking on the bus. I am thinking getting off the bus. I'm thinking while I'm in the shower. I'm thinking while I'm shaving. I am thinking listening to music. I am thinking while I'm talking. I'm thinking while I'm walking. I am thinking about things I did not think to be thought about. I am thinking about beautiful women. I am thinking about what beautiful women think about. I am thinking about the people who I've shortchanged. I am thinking about the people who have shortchanged me. I am thinking about why there is not enough shortchange to go around. I am thinking about people who've been around. I am thinking about people who are going around and around. I am thinking about people who never get off the ground. People who kind of get stuck in the mud. I am thinking about people who go into bars at night. I am thinking about people who would not set foot in a bar at night. I am thinking about who picks up the tab for thinking. I am thinking about the feeling I had when I was sinking. I am thinking about how hard it was swimming to the shore. I am thinking it is better to swim than to drown. I am thinking that the sharks think very seriously indeed. I am thinking dolphins still survive and play happily. I am thinking I'd rather be a dolphin than a shark. I am thinking a lot of sharks are not very happy. I am thinking if you're not happy, that's your problem. I'm thinking I'm happy. Now, this poem is about a house friend of mine, Vincent Kelly, lived in, so it's called The House. The House. A large wooden edifice surrounded by trees and shrubbery. Green leaves in summer, coaxed by the warm nose of the sun. The damp days of autumn, with falling, soggy leaves, watery rain, dropping in pellets of loneliness. Winter, with frost on the grass, the burst of daffodils in spring, shooting in yellow gunfire towards the sun. A family asleep, dreaming with the angels, in sweet slumber, galvanizing the daily action of being alive on the great rim of the world. Baby's bottles and nappies with walkers, tricycles and Santa Claus. Christmas morning, cries of joy and laughter under the Christmas tree. Fairy lights and Christmas dinner. First days at school, parents bursting with pride. The joy of children growing up, like acorns becoming tall. The daily grind of earning a living. Returning home in the evening to the family circle. I, a guest, happy to visit. A split atom, a split in the atom of love, with fallout and carnage. All through family dramas, the house stood solid as a rock, with protection and strength to keep lives on course. A straight line towards the future. A family home with a human cargo. So I love the crew, these suburban sailors of this Noah ship. This poem got the title Bastille Poem. Poetica. Bastille Poetica. I'm a captive in this prison, with its white sheeted walls of blank paper, trying to keep a diary of the time I am doing. A major literary grant, and you know somebody has been released, albeit to a different set of walls. In the middle of the night, the screaming starts. The squeaky pens can be heard recording the insane cries for help. The medical officer does the usual thing. Stronger tablets, and recommends a month in the Thorong Grocery Center. The solitary confinement wing is a busy place. The lack of hope breaks the strongest spirit. All the poets crying into their pillows, praying desperately to make sleep arrive quickly. In the poets' prison yards, hard labor is the common thing. Crowbars, shovels, and pickaxes are held shoulder high to dig up from the unrelenting concrete a few lines of pure poetry that will look well in the parole report. This is a hallowed place where nobody gets out alive. Only the poems survive if they are good enough. Bad poems means the sentence is increased. But the great day of freedom is coming. Even if it is only a mirage of shadows on the locked cell door. I've been writing, trying to write some songs. I want to read you a few lyrics. I'll read you a few lyrics. This is called "There Is Beauty in a Smile." They talk in languages that I do not understand. They make out not all the time, but they give in relation to the burden that they carry. They come from far away, but I am glad that they are here. We met at noon and midnight for a beer, trying to answer the problems of survival, how it has been since their arrival. Love being born after the ones we have lost. I wish I could speak your tongue, but welcome in. I hope you stay and make a home. The heartaches and pains, too incalculable to count the cost. People are beautiful. Action, color, song, and dance. The beauty of people is my heartfelt cry. I had an intellectually disadvantaged brother who died a couple of years ago. This poem, when it became that things weren't going terribly well, I wrote this for my brother Peter. Night prayer for Peter. For the duration of the time that remains, we who are close to you grope in the darkness for a sign. We look for a light that will carry you home when it seems all the daylight has broken into evening. For you now the music of the last film has begun. Now you are the hero and the star, just like we knew that you would be. The quiet, unassuming hero with the gentle smile. Our hearts are breaking as we say our prayers dutifully. So wonder in awe about a life full of the greatness of humble love. The pain of parting as you wave your hand and say goodbye. So leave us, your audience, dumbfounded admiration. This poem is called "Making an Airplane Airborne." make me an airplane there, Lord. I raised my head with difficulty to the morning Jesus to have a little chat. Just like the awkward maneuver of a pilot with a joystick making an airplane airborne. Above the parapet where the fast bullets fly, the little missiles that blow people apart. For all the weapons in Iraq, there are a zillion bullets that break free from the trees, like the birds who fly two by two into an Irish dawn, with the rays of the sun reflected in their eyes. Two gulls in the yellow suede frock of creepers tap their way instinctively in search of a Piscean breakfast, with a musician's intuition and an unhappy glare and teddy boy look, a rock and roll rhythm of rebellion, disgruntled before the earth death. Sarah and Frederick Duck, with expert savvy, gauge as they prowl with the pirate ships of their bodies, the calm water for breakfast of an Irish sardine, then proceed elsewhere to resume their piracy. A serious cacophony of early morning traffic as a fourth JCB crushes tin for recycling. The vulgarity reaches a peaking point when the serviceman stops nearby, a worker alights and casually takes a leak in the harbor. A solitary swan in white-winged feathered wedding dress glides in easy ripple water motion to hunt, sinking its long bird giraffe neck and sends the royal eggs Benedict starter for the day. I turn to my feathered companions in the harbor's water to continue the morning chat with Jesus. So I take my leave. I offer a cigarette to a wino with his bottle, who announces that today is his birthday. In his gaze, there seems to be a foghorn warning about the events that might happen during the remainder of the day. I'll finish up with forgive me. I'll finish up with these two poems. The first one is called Tight Margins and Parts. Tight Margins and Parts. A cigarette helps ease tension. Rashid, night security in the Hotel Altona, Rue de Faubourg, he has told me there is no smoking in the hotel. Being a gambler, with the Prix de l'Arc and Longchamp on Sunday, this is Friday, I've taken precaution of 200 Marlboro secreted under my bed to sustain me until the flight home on Tuesday. A glass of water in a plastic cup as an ashtray to conceal all evidence once the bolts are flushed down the loo, the money I would have spent at the races. My first priority is a cigarette. Anyway, I might have backed the wrong horse. The margins are tight in Paris. So what Dixon is the modern slave master of the poor. So it has made a nicotine junkie out of me. All my life, I've been an each way bet. I'm an outsider. Now the odds are shortening. But favoritism is no guarantee of success. Sometimes there is a bunch finish, so the winner can be disqualified. It happens when people, not horses, are handicapped. Some horses never leave the stalls, but they do come under starter's orders. So the punter can lose heavily. He has to. So otherwise the bookie doesn't make a profit. No such thing as jam in the donut, yolk in the egg, or vineyards in France. A light without a switch, heaven without the angels, the stage without actors, or drama in the soul. The rosary on my table where I write, the beads, like horses, in single file in the parade ring, give me hope that the tight margins of Paris will not kill me. In the Republic of Liberty, Equality, and Fraternity. So I finish up with this. This is kind of an effort of a song. It's kind of a song. It's called You Can't Beat the Boogie. You can't beat the boogie. I tried so hard. I tried all the time. With a broken heart and empty pockets. Turned over so many times. My nerves so rattled. Shook inside like a dice being rolled. Now you just can't beat the bookie. Horses with funny names. Lost in follow finish. Each time a mild heart seizure. On a lucky day, with the ill-gotten gains, always forgot the next day of rain. Felt my brain going through a mangle, always looking for a fast angle. No, you can't beat the bookie. Heard about a guy after a dog race, asked the question, can you bet on the bunny? When you lose the rent, it's not so funny. My bookie is high on the stock exchange, but my zero bank balance is unchanged. No, you can't beat the bookie. There are phone books, tipsters, and favorites, not worth a damn. When the third horse in a 12 falls at the last while well ahead, your mind goes into a spin. Your last 50 euros, maybe be better off dead. No, you can't beat the bookie. The bookie calls the shots. Like a postcard of a holiday resort you would like to visit. Get a suntan. Cool drinks in the shade. Call closure to your gambling charade. The final knock on the head makes you feel a novena should be set. No, you can't beat the bookie. Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, John McNeigh.